You're listening to Grocery Journal.
Enjoy the show.
And welcome back to another episode of the Grocery Journal. I'm joined here today in a pretty special place. We're in an event space that Weeds have put together. So we're in Vancouver. I'm joined by Steph Martins, a cannabis entrepreneur. Steph has worked an impressive breadth of roles within the cannabis space, everything from extraction, processing, working with a whole bunch of brands, recreational, medical, and I believe your most recent position was at Adastra?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Okay, yeah. Well, awesome. Welcome. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How's your day been? Because it's looking pretty rainy out there right now.
Actually, very good. Quite busy. My recent role, as you mentioned, was working with Adastra in a director of marketing capacity, which usually turns out in cannabis, as most people are startups, many, many hats. Yet I started a role with their investor relations agency, IR Labs. So I started that last week, and I'm working with Adastra from that side of things. So there's lots on the move there with PR, IR today. Well, the rain barely impacted me.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love that attitude. I feel rain's kind of like a perspective thing. Mm-hmm. If you're okay with it, it can be great.
Exactly.
So congratulations on your new role.
Thank you.
So marketing, that strikes me as quite a unique proposition in the cannabis space.
Yeah.
Did we working like any marketing roles prior to cannabis?
Yes. Actually, prior to joining the cannabis industry in 2017, I opened and operated restaurants in Toronto. So I had a 12-year career in hospitality, doing everything from bartending, serving, supervising, and then I became the GM of a high-volume space in Toronto downtown when I was living there. And after about 3 years of being a GM of two different spots, I decided to understand a little bit more. I was always around cannabis, but I knew that the emerging market was happening and it was going to federally legalize for recreational use or adult use. So I made the move from Toronto to Vancouver to work in the space. Because of my hospitality experience, it was very much, you know, doing many roles. Some of that was marketing and promotions. Alcohol has restrictions, but not as much as cannabis. And I have a postgraduate certificate in public relations. So I've done some not-for-profit internal comms. So that is marketing to some degree. Yet I develop more of my creative side of it within the cannabis space, which sounds strange, but.
No, that sounds pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So what's changed from executing marketing in a hospitality space to now in the cannabis world?
Understanding more regulations and restrictions. Also understanding, because in marketing, I also did lots of operations and procurement, just the state of the industry that we're in. The businesses that survive, they tend to keep leaner teams, which makes sense to me, why they might attract more entrepreneur minds to do many things. So while I would do the design, I also understood the regulatory and QA lens and would work with vendors to procure, let's say if it was packaging or hardware for vapes. What changed was restriction. So instead of being able to be creative and, you know, catchy with your words, we had to wear a lens of, especially in designing packaging, read the regs. You can only, you know, have like 7-point font from the border, and there has to be the THC symbol has to be the same or similar size to the logo. So really, whenever I would approach creative ideation projects within cannabis, it was understanding the regs intimately so that I could deliver that information, which is complex, to a creative designer to deliver the best product efficiently.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds like quite a big challenge. It's quite complex, actually. Mm-hmm. And so has it just been a case of, yeah, just having to read through regulations and learn it? Like, are there tools or software solutions in place, or is it still kind of early for that?
I'm not sure, but there was no processes. I would set processes with the companies that I worked with. It's not that simple. And again, because we did work with a leaner team in my last few roles, I generally leaned on the support of my entrepreneur network for creatives, and not everyone knows cannabis. So sometimes, like when you're working with a writer, let's say, you'd have to onboard them with the information that you already knew about cannabis. How I learned the regulations was, yes, reading them, yet also being around the plant for as long as I have been. And the advantage of 2017 and 2018, especially being out in the community and going to trade events and events, are definitely a passion and a forte of mine, connecting with community. That's where I learned, just listening to the people, talking on panels, getting to ask questions, because reading out of a textbook or just a dry Health Canada doc would never do it for me. Of course, when the packaging regulations came out in more of a PDF text, I was able to read that and like pull excerpts for folks, but I just knew it inherently. I had the advantage of, before the Cannabis Act was instilled, I was working in a marketing role. I was an executive assistant plus marketing, plus events, et cetera, investor relations, and got to hear from Health Canada when the consultation happened for the regulations. And I was actually on a call with them related to marketing prohibitions. And there was a Q&A from brands that were already existing. And I think there was a gentleman from Canopy at that time asking, okay, if we want to develop this strategy and campaign, and I know Health Canada has these restrictions, but they hadn't unveiled them yet. Can we pitch this to you for review before we spend money and dollars and personnel time on it? And the answer was no. So perhaps a bureaucratic remark, but something that I got the advantage of learning, which is dialogue and discourse.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting piece, because mm-hmm. there's an element of interpretation, I imagine, to these regulations, and on the other side of that, risk appetite.
Absolutely.
So, example, I was just you speaking about this earlier was QR codes on packaging.
Yes.
So, understand that by the letter of the law, this is not allowed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But companies are doing it. At least one or two.
That's interesting to me. I heard about that at the last conference we were at together, I think, and I find it intriguing because QR codes took over our lives or reemerged over the last couple of years. And I've seen brands and worked with brands sneaking in a little bit more info on their bag. So when I worked with Phyto Extractions, we put a tagline on their bag, and our QAs said, yes, it's about risk management. Like, what will your QAs say yes to? And any business is about mitigated risk.
Hmm. It's crazy to put a tagline on is kind of like a big deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess this is kind of a moving train as well, because, you know, we had the Cannabis Act, we had the Cannabis 2.0, which introduced the edibles and the beverages,
mm-hmm.
but we still have a lot left to come. And just to throw into the mix, I guess, as well, like maybe this is actually more so for the stores. I don't know if this impacts like a production cultivation kind of level, mm-hmm. but they have to also then wrestle with bylaws and sometimes conflicting bylaws or bylaws that conflict with federal or provincial regulations.
Absolutely. And that does exist in a processor realm as well. So example is various license classes. There is one for organolytic testing, which is, I think, a benefit because in the absence of allowance to do focus groups, which traditional marketing can do, focus groups or A/B testing with your products. I mean, heck, even our sales reps at the former brand that I worked with, they can't try the product until we go to a store and purchase it. So how are you meant to sell or understand or ascertain and deliver information about flavor notes to somebody? It's impossible. Like some of my friends that work in alcohol, it blows their mind. They're like, well, we can try the product before we sell it.
Hmm.
Not possible until you purchase it after it's been excised and at the retail markup.
I mean, I've walked into liquor stores before and had been given a sample.
Yes.
And that seems kind of wild.
Yeah. So organoleptic testing is a benefit because you can bring your subjects into a room and consume. However, bylaw comes into play because in BC and most of Canada, I do believe, you can't smoke, like, exhale combustibles indoors. So the bylaw would kick that into, let's say you licensed a portion of your facility or a room in your space, you're not able to smoke. So how do you get around that? It could be outside, like I don't even know how you could license an outdoor space. I'm sure, I know people have done it successfully, but it's all to say that the bylaw will kick in at any point.
Why is it going to be so difficult?
We live in Canada.
I'd heard it was bureaucratic.
Yes.
But now I've seen and experienced it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, England is full of bureaucracy, but this is next level, actually.
Yeah.
I found personally, like, my subjective experience.
Mm-hmm.
You will have a much better insight, I feel, than I do on this. You know, we've clearly, from what we've just talked about, and we know that the Cannabis Act isn't perfect. You know, there's problems with it. There's things that have been apparent for over a year now that could be like easy changes. What are you seeing? Or do you have a feel for, are things likely to change for the better? Is the government listening? Is there going to be collaboration?
I'm optimistic. I think that it's important to maintain, you know, a positive mindset going into these things. That's a personal and professional note. I am optimistic because I see these stakeholders coming to events. So the BC Cannabis Summit that we were at in April, we had those stakeholders there. So are they listening? I'm not entirely sure. I'm not supported or guided by the fact that the Cannabis Act has not been reviewed, and they keep proclaiming bureaucratic COVID delays and that messaging as a result when it was supposed to be reviewed and updated in June 2021. I'm not sure it'll get updated this year because that was almost three years after legalization, and they'd put that in saying it's quite restrictive because Canadian government approaches with much more regs than they can relax. It's easier that way than giving folks freedom and trying to restrict them. So they said October 17, 2018, we'll instill these rules. In June 2021, we'll review them. Of course, during that time, we're in the height of a pandemic, so they didn't get reviewed. But there's a ton of taxpayer dollars, money from the industry, revenue that's been collected through the government. So I think that we can push back, but I do think it's up to us to get involved in groups. Like the Chamber of Commerce has the National Cannabis Working Group, and I've got to see some of their agendas that they pitched to Health Canada to change. I'm hopeful that things will change. I think that we just need data as well. So the benefit of the Cannabis Act and the licensing classes with Health Canada is that they're able to gain data points from all levels of business. And I think that they're using that for good. I'm not sure that's entirely true when it comes to retail, with public and private in BC. However, I think that when it comes to packaging and marketing, I can see that being a little bit more relaxed. And also, licensed producers are pushing boundaries. I've seen, you're not supposed to do metallic packaging, yet there are some brands that have them in store, or pushing the Pantone envelope and adding taglines and things like that it's mitigated risk. So enforcement's just coming into play. I think these folks are saying, let's put that out there and hope that we don't get a slap on the wrist. Mm. And if we do, we'll back off and change. I suspect that the government's listening. I think that most of it has to do with the data collected. However, I think the proof is in the pudding.
Well, you know, the data, I was kind of surprised to find that, you know, they're selling that data back to those retailers or the LPs.
Yes.
And it's not cheap.
No, it's not. I have experience with that.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to put it politely, but it just seems like it's taking the piss a little bit.
It's definitely a grease. They're taking a cut, which, I mean, that's the thing with government monopolization. And I have my thoughts on that, which I'd like to share at another point. But to keep it positive, I suspect that there'll be a relax of some rules. I mean, like, even edible shapes were regulated, so you couldn't have something that was enticing to children. But in Ontario, they have censored edibles that's just launched, which I'm very excited to try when I go into Toronto. So there's some creative solutions to the issue or problem, which some great marketers have shown and achieved. And I believe that the government will look at that and say, well, what risk has this posed? You know, no one's been harmed. So, and if they don't say that by themselves, I think that we have a pretty solid foundation of a great community and business leaders that will speak up.
Hmm. I think, yeah, that's an interesting point, because it's almost like the more that you try to restrict the activities around cannabis, it's like what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Exactly.
And it just forces people to be more creative and more out of the box. Mm-hmm. And, would you go back to traditional marketing stuff? Like, say you could run ads on Facebook and Instagram and all this kind of stuff. I'm sure a lot of companies would do it, but maybe a lot of would be like, actually, we'll stick with these more organic methods that we found that work well. And
I mean, there's definitely value in traditional marketing. There are digital ads on paid sites. I know the Score had a Pure Sunfarms ad a couple years back that I'd seen. So there are some more demographic specific sites or apps that will allow certain advertisements. I've certainly seen like age-gated sites or I forget which one now. There's another age-gated site. I'm not sure if it was like a casino or something, but a new ad used to have proper traditional advertisements within age-gated bars across Canada. And I do like that stuff. I think it's interesting, yet I'm an out-of-the-box thinker, so I believe in different methods of doing things. I also believe in the value of grassroots marketing, which can be more costly because it takes more time. Another part of my background while I was doing hospitality was I worked at Lululemon, and they, even though they're a huge mega corp, believed heavily in grassroots marketing. They didn't, I think they had one ad in the Yoga Journal when I worked there in 2008 to 2014. And all they would do was put us in the team, give us discounts, of course, put us in the brand, give us discounts to go to the classes. We'd go to said classes and then just get out in the wild. And then that message really seeded, kind of like a mycelium network. So that I believe in heavily. It also brings like that special, that magic, that element of magic to the community, which cannabis has. And that's something that's to be, I think, appreciated.
100%. It's like some guerrilla marketing. I love that. Yeah, that's very, very smart. So we've got Farmgate coming up on the horizon. I just want to, can you speak to that a little bit? Like, I'm guessing it's on your radar. Is it, are you quite active in terms of planning for that, or is it still waiting for it to coalesce a little bit more? Where are you at with that?
I've followed it. I gave consultation for it, as well as the consumption lounges, which I understand will be, a decision will have been made this fall related to those in BC.
That's exciting.
So that's exciting. I always viewed Farmgate as an exciting potential, because I love, like, from the wineries of the Okanagan, you can go up to those folks and see the people that have grown these grapes. When I was younger, I grape picked in Australia and for a winery, and it was a family vineyard. So these people have put their heart and soul into those plants, similar to cannabis. I've seen growers, you know, they just have that love towards the plant, and definitely the end product reflects that. So I'm excited for Farmgate, for the cannabis tourism side of things as well. In Canada, we've been federally legalized since 2018, and why not infuse some tourism dollars into a spot that has done it well, especially BC, like BC Bud's renowned. Why not do that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm very excited about that as well. And I genuinely believe that will generate a lot of international tourism. You know, in the UK, it's the trips to Amsterdam.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And actually more so recently, Spain, like Barcelona, they have some great cannabis clubs there. Oh yeah, and you're right by the beach, great music.
That sounds amazing.
I just can't wait for this, because for me, it's where like the culture really like permeates. It's not just a transaction in a store and then you go home. It's like, you can meet people, you will meet people. They will be like-minded people because they all have this plant in common. And so when we have that legit here in BC, like that's going to be very, very cool.
I agree.
And I hope that it will be like another revenue stream for the stores that we know, like there's this lawsuit going on right now. There's pretty bad margins, you know, compared to the government run stores. So I already spoke with Heat and Herb, Mike, the owner there, lovely guy. And then Nanaimo store, like they already have, you know, kind of a plan in place and a vision for how that will become a consumption lounge as well when the time comes. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, that's going to be great to see.
Yeah. I love Amsterdam. I've only been there, I'm Dutch heritage background, and I've only been there for 48 hours by myself in 2016, because I was there for work. Hospitality sent me to Oktoberfest in Munich with a huge group. I'm like, I'm going to go to Amsterdam. It was awesome. I loved going to a coffee shop and buying amazing bud and being able to have a coffee. And the energy is just, it's that community, like you said. It's, you know, I can't wait for the day.
Have you ever had that kind of thing in Canada? Like, there must have been some variety, but maybe, not the same.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is cannabis culture in New Amsterdam Cafe, and I love that space, and I hosted with a former company that I worked with, Legalization Day. We did a lunch down the street in Gastown, and then I was remarking this the other day to a friend, we had a table of like 17 folks or our company. So everything from capital markets guys, we had an insurance broker who was helping with our benefits, our scientists that were doing the extraction that have like PhDs in ethnobotany. And I was just like a hodgepodge of people coming together around cannabis. And it was a really interesting time. Yet these are people that necessarily wouldn't have come to the dank basement that is New Amsterdam Cafe. So it's not for everybody. Some of my girlfriends that want a little bit more of a refined experience would be guided to go to more of a upper echelon style lounge. And, that has like a beautiful dab bar and different gravity bombs and things. That would be more of their style. I would never get them to go into New Amsterdam Cafe.
That's a really good point. And I think that's what legalization brings with it, is the legitimacy of going to a place and knowing it's all above board and whatnot, because there's a perception, and I'm sure some of them are like dingy smokehouses and whatnot, and a lot of people don't really want to go and socialize or be there. There was actually a club in London the London Cannabis Club, shut down now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But we'd heard about it, and I got sent as my as the housemate that had to go because people didn't want to go. They're like, "Is it going to be really shady?" No, it was like a cannabis like consumption space, and it was in this like shady industrial estate in like East London.
Oh man!
And it's like just there's nothing. There's like a little doorway. There's like a big building, and you know, you get told like before you go there, and then you go downstairs, and then it's just beautiful.
Nice.
Split level, like open plan, big like wooden beam staircase, like exposed brick everywhere.
Gorgeous.
Like an actual bar area, and you just roll up there, loads of like booths and stuff, and you pay something to go in, and then you know, that was incredible because you're meeting this really good caliber of people from like all walks of life, and you're learning and connecting. So
yeah.
I think with legalization, yeah, it's going to be cool because we're going to see that kind of level of stuff.
I think so too.
So I just want to like finish by touching on this. You mentioned you started a role with IR Labs. So can you tell me like a little bit about this company and what you're going to be doing there?
Yeah, so I met them because they were working with Adastra. So they support capital markets, investor relations, PR, communications, and some marketing as well. And they have a roster of cannabis and psychedelics and emerging tech clients and a whole myriad. So they are a boutique agency, I would say, but they're growing hugely. They opened last year, and I think I might have been hire number 19, and I started with them last week, and I always meet new people every day. So what they do is, like, it's mostly capital markets items. So investor relations, communications, and a lot of the regulatory side of things that go along with that. The skill set that I'm bringing over is many things, yet one of them is regulations, because I work so heavily within that in cannabis. And it was great to learn that skill set and that framework, because there's a ton of that in the securities side of things. So I'm still learning that. I'm more of a creative at heart, and you know, love writing and love organization and project management and people, and they have that secret sauce.
That sounds cool, and it's interesting to see also in the psychedelic space. It seems to be popping off. Must be exciting. Seems like you definitely an entrepreneurial kind of role.
Yes.
It sounds like
I like the variety. So I did own an agency with a partner actually in the cannabis space for a year. We did creative marketing, digital strategy, social media implementation, events as well. And unfortunately, because of COVID and the way that the world was going, we decided to part ways, and I ended up working with Adastra through an incorporation that I set up for myself. So as a consultant for them and a myriad of brands beneath them, because they're so busy. And yeah, I like variety. Variety is definitely the spice of life. And I like to be able to, you know, wear one hat in a certain capacity and then, you know, pick up something else. It's really good for neuroplasticity. That's how I'll frame
Hell
it.
Yeah. I'm the same as well. I can't just do one thing.
I couldn't work in a lumbering corporation by any means. Like, do this, but then beyond this, this person does this. No, it's just strange to me.
So it seems like you're kind of at the corporate end of cannabis, I think. Yep. It's fair to say, but you don't strike me as coming across corporate at all. Very vibrant. It really seems like you got your shit together, so I definitely respect that. In your mind, is there a marriage between like craft, local, small batch, and the kind of scale that corporate demands?
It's a very good question. I would say I'm not sure, because my latest experience and the industry as it is, the prices in the market are grinding down so much, perhaps to compete, because there's a saturation of all variety of CPG products within cannabis. I wish for a day that happens, but there needs to be some kind of, I don't want to say price fixing, but regulation around that. Because, well, recently in Ontario, obviously the Value Buds chain, I'm sure you're familiar with, they are not a well-received chain. And that is because these corporate folks, and Fire and Flower is another example, I don't want to call people out, but they have a lot of investment dollars behind them, and probably people that have inroads to the government that can make these changes. So it's pretty systemic problem where, you know, Value Buds can sell for less than margin, and this consumer will probably go for that, especially if they're new and they don't necessarily care so much about quality, they're going to go for that. But what that looks like is The licensing fees do not get waived for the private retailers that are surrounding them. And in Ontario, there's no spacing rules either. So there's one store next to another. Like I did a big RV trip last year with Phyto Extractions and the sales director there at the time. And we visited, I think all told in 72 days, he did 490 stores. I visited 169 in 3.5 weeks across country during a pandemic when a ton had opened. And it was like whack-a-mole. Like there'd be one store and then down a laneway or down an alleyway alcove, another store. And I thought, how is this ever going to survive? So will there be a marriage of craft? I think craft might have the best chance with Farmgate, which ultimately craft is about community and that love for the plant and the grassroots side of things. So I don't think there's value in them scaling.
Good answer. Yeah, no, I like that. All right, I've got one final question mm-hmm. for you. This might be a bit of a spicy one
yeah.
to end on, but I'm curious on your perspective as a woman in the industry.
Yes.
New industry. My hope, forever probably naively, is that it's the time to reset and get things right and mm-hmm. do things differently. Mm-hmm. Have you found that it's been like a inclusive place to work compared to working in other industries?
I'm a bit of an anomaly in that I've always been a female leader, so to speak. So I was the GM of a high volume restaurant and I was promoted into that role by a male who was a counterpart GM. And I think there's going to be adversity in different leadership styles across any industry. I see that in corporate formats, in cannabis, have I certainly experienced it? Sure, I would say. Yet generally, I've had the advantage of surrounding myself via really good mentors that are men and women. And I learn leadership styles also from men. So I have both sides of things. Just being a female, like, I don't know, I haven't experienced too much negative. I've had a lot of mentorship or allyship around me. I know it exists. I think it's ideal to have, you know, both types in your arena and port pieces of leadership styles and skills from everyone because like there's always pros and cons to whatever we do. I know that I myself and some of my female counterparts might approach from more of a compassionate and inclusive collective side of things when they're leading, yet that also causes redundancy and inefficiencies and lack of communication or I guess miscommunication. So it's important to have both. I don't think either are going away for a while in any kind of industry. Like my father works in traditional media and it exists. It's just standing up for yourself and having boundaries. That's another thing. I've always been in leadership roles, so I was able to say no and say, you know, call it out when it happens. And call it out in an eloquent way. I would never want to leave a bad taste in anybody's mouth or leave my reputation looking a certain type of way. But yeah, it definitely exists. And it's just about how you manage it.
Guys, very classy. You are absolutely a boss. I love it. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And sharing your insights. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.